So we are in skill 7 of this 12-skill leadership journey that we're taking this year. And so I'm doing an episode a month dedicated to that. For most of you listening to this, you're listening along. For a number of you, you're in our leadership coaching this year. Figure that leadership out. And the last skill that we talked about was that really, as a leader, you've got to embrace the idea you're going to be misunderstood. And being misunderstood is essential because you're taking people somewhere that they have never been before or never imagined they could go. Now, for skill 8, I'm going to talk to you about how to close that gap where you're misunderstood. But I've got to teach you first this skill, skill 7, how to perceive, how to feel the room so that you can know where you're being misunderstood. Now, part of feeling the room is anticipating gaps that are going to be there. I obviously am not communicating with you one-on-one right now, but I anticipate things, objections, misunderstandings, as much as I can. Nobody does this perfect. But very much so, when you are in a meeting and when you are speaking and when you're interacting with others one-on-one and you want to move it forward, there's this vision that burns in you, right? It's the 5 stages of vision we talked way back about, that you're bothered about something and this fire burns in you and you are starting to execute it. You want to know, you want to be able to feel the room where you're misunderstood. You want to be able to perceive. Now, I struggled with this in a big way early on as a communicator and as a leader. I had a horrible tell. Tell, by that I mean like in poker, when you do things that reveal certain parts of who you are. One of the things that I love about doing the leadership coaching with people is if I get to meet with them in person, I get to start to notice some of their tells. We all have them. And one of mine was that my face would flush red when I didn't feel like I was being understood. You could call me Red Cheeks McAllister, Hot Cheeks McAllister. Well, that doesn't have the sound I thought it would. But it was the weirdest, wildest, frustrating thing that people would notice, and it was embarrassing. I would be speaking, and if I didn't have the ability in that moment to relax into clarity. That's the language I would use now. I didn't know then. If I would be speaking and I didn't know how to relax into clarity and relax in the moment and not be insecure in my identity, I would try to force the conversation with greater intensity and my cheeks would flush red if I didn't feel like people were getting what I was saying. You know, when you're leading an organization through change, and you're leading them through a turnaround and a release of what they're holding on to embrace something new, where it's a person and they're making change, there's going to be things that are misunderstood. There's going to be pushback. And rather than figuring out where that was so that I could better help them, I felt threatened by it. I felt threatened by it, and so my cheeks would flush red. I could do this in meetings, you know, and I would be trying to cast this vision and sell the next step and fire people up for it. And if I felt like they weren't responding the way that I want them to or as quick as I could, then this involuntary reaction would happen. My ears would also turn red. They would burn hot. This is the weirdest thing I know, but I remember I could feel my ears and they would just be so hot and red. Now, that was 18 years ago when I started as a leader, and I think that happened for about 5 or 6 years, very, very, unaware that it was occurring. And as I began to be aware that, oh my gosh, I'm flashing red and this has got to stop, I didn't really know what to do. And what happened that changed things for me is everything the first 12 episodes are about of this podcast. You learn who you are. You learn to relax in the moment. Then you can actually show up and give an impact rather than need to get a reaction. So the external problem we're talking about is that you're misunderstood, and that was what we went deep into with the last skill. And the internal problem here is that we can't perceive the room, where it's at and what's actually happening, or we're not relaxed about it because we feel some angst. And I just want to say to you as a leader, you have a vision. That's a start. That's awesome. It takes so much bravery and courage to see things a different way. I'm constantly inspired by people that look at a situation and go, but what about this? You have a vision. That's a start. That's awesome. But here is something I need you to grasp so deep within yourself. We are not rational beings. I mean, I guess we could say that we're not rational beings first. We feel first, then we backfill. We feel, F-E-E-L, and then we backfill, F-I-L-L, with rationality. But we feel emotions first. Let's think about it this way. You're buying a house. And I used to be a lot more involved in real estate, and it was wild how you could just see people be like, this is the house we want. And here's why. Well, they felt it, and then they backfilled with reasons. They applied rationality. They liked the way the house made them feel, and then they said, oh, well, it's also this and this and this and this. And you know, we buy cars this way. I mean, we buy feelings. We buy feelings. And this is why I love working with people at the level of their imagination, if we're really going to help them relax and amplify the best parts of who they are and become relaxed, secure, powerful leaders that are safe and you can trust them. It's working at the imagination level because that's where the emotions can break through with a greater truth than sometimes our rational minds will let us, because we'll distance ourselves from reality. This is one of the things I love to do for those of you listening to this that have been through the 12-week Figure That Shift Out coaching. In week 7, in the one-on-one, I do something with you with the table exercise that isn't in the Figure That Shift Out book, because I want that experience to be live. I ask you to think about a part of you, and I give you a specific way to think about it so that you can access that. The resistance breaks down and stops the brain from defending itself from seeing truth when you go through the imagination. And any resistance that you face in helping others make change, even in your own change that you would make, and if this change is healthy and it's a good direction, it's good for you or it's good for the organization, it happens, that resistance happens, because people can't imagine it. They can't see, feel, and hear that new reality. So if you're going to understand the places that you're misunderstood, if you're going to perceive, if you're going to feel the room, then you've got to start thinking about people differently, that their heart comes first, and then it's their mind. This is why it's way easier to lead when you capture people's heart with the vision before you try to capture their mind. Now, we'll talk about how you capture the mind, too, in a bit. For now, I just want you to get this skill down. I want you to train yourself to notice people's reaction to the vision, right? And if you're a person who loves people and you bleed your vision, right? I know people that bleed vision, but they don't love people, so they're dangerous. And I know people that are loving towards people, but they don't bleed vision, so they're directionless, right? We don't want to be directionless or dangerous. So we love people, we bleed the vision, but we got to learn to notice their reactions. Now, you can train yourself to notice things. Happens all the time. I look at my house when I come home, okay? There's going to be some empty water bottles here and there. Right? We buy the sparkling water. I love that stuff so much. Sparkling water. I wish I had one right now. And I'll look at different parts of the house, and there's like half-empty sparkling water cans. Grumpy dad, right? I've thought about starting like a grumpy dad Twitter thing, because it just drives me crazy. I'm like, no, this is so much good stuff, and it's being frivolously wasted, right? Sorry to play into this grumpy dad stereotype. And I'm amazed at how I walk around and see all kinds of lights on. Now, I don't know at what point it happens, but sometime between being 18 and living at home and probably not noticing when lights were on, to now my 39-year-old self, and I wake up every morning and I see that my kids leave the bathroom light on every dang night. I'm like, am I the only one that thinks about electricity? I'm walking around turning off lights. That could be like a part-time job at my house. Well, here's the thing. You pay the electric bill. You train yourself to notice, right, without even really trying. Now, as much as I'm joking about this, a lot of it, I really don't really care. I don't drive around from gas station to gas station being like, I got to save the most money. I'm going to waste all this time and energy trying to save 2 cents a gallon. But you can train yourself to notice what is happening around you. And the way that you're going to do that, the way that you're going to get into people's hearts and not try to go to their mind first, is understanding this one truth. Okay, this is going to help you understand that we are not rational beings first. This is going to help you perceive the room and build the skill to train yourself to notice. And here it is. It starts with grasping this truth. Perception is reality. Perception is reality. I mean, you see this in massive ways in what's happening in politics at a national level in the States. I know that there are other countries that listen to this, and it's so awesome to have you here, and I'm so glad you're here. But you know what's happening. You're seeing it on the news. And it's true in every place, every country, every culture, whatever it is. Perception will always beat reality for the battle in people's brains. I mean, have you ever been confused by how someone can just have this whack viewpoint that completely misses reality? Because perception wins. This is why. Now, I want to dive deep into this idea for a bit, okay? Perception is all that matters when you're leading people through change. All that matters is what they perceive. And so know this. If you're going to lead, you're going to take people out of the limits of their perception. Their perception has some kind of predefined boundaries. They've been fenced in by it. But you can't logically teach someone about reality. I mean, if that works, then every time somebody shares data and statistics about viewpoints that are wrong, people go, oh, well, I'll change my viewpoint. Well, they don't do that because there's some kind of perception that they're holding on to. Fear tricks our brain. So if you want to help people wake up to a new reality, okay, you've got to relax them. You've got to relax them. How do you relax them? By affirming or validating something they are saying or feeling. So we're going to take this deep into application, okay? And the first piece of application, if you're going to learn to perceive the room, is to release the insecure ego, your ego, my ego, and affirm the reality of others. We're going to affirm their reality. This is what relaxes them. As we affirm the reality, then we can come in with our vision. And I've talked to you a lot about this before, how we have to engage the brain with a story so their brain will continue to relax and hear what we're saying. And we want to inspire them to take action based on that story that we're telling them. But we've got to get them to relax. And there's going to be something that we need to affirm and validate in what they're experiencing. I have a quote for you that I've actually read on this podcast before. So I'm going to read it to you a second time because it is that good. It is out of a medical doctor, PhD, out of Brazil, and he's talking about the power of perception with what we experience, and he says, our perception does not identify the outside world as it really is. This is Jorge Martins de Oliveira, and I'm sure that I've botched that name, Key and Peele, substitute teacher style, but he says, our perception does not identify the outside world as it really is. But the way we are allowed to recognize it as a consequence of transformations performed by our senses. In other words, all that we're experiencing isn't real. It's just that our senses are translating what's happening. And here's what he says. Thus, we transform photons into images, vibrations into sounds. In other words, sounds aren't reality. Vibrations are reality, but your ear translates the sound. And he goes on to say, and noises and chemical reactions into specific smells and tastes. Actually, he goes on to say, the universe is colorless, inodorous, insipid, and silent. Whoa, head trip. I mean, if there was ever a quote that I could actually say, mind blown, that's it. There is not a sound right now that you're hearing. It's this wave. But it's hitting your ear, and your brain and your ear are working together to translate it. Why? Because perception is reality. Now, I know that was a really deep dive to make that point, but when you lead people into change, it is so hard to get them to release and embrace new direction, okay? So start with affirming the reality. I've used this with you before, but it's so good. The King of Queens episode where Doug goes to visit his family, and I'd shared this story recently speaking, so I think it's fresh in my mind. and he's playing with his dog in the backyard, and Carrie is with his parents in the house, and they're watching videos of him as a kid playing with the dog and calling this dog by a name, and it's the same name he's using as a grown man in the backyard with the other, with this other dog. And they look the same, but there's no way they can be the same. It's been too many years that have passed. And so Carrie raises this issue, and she goes, listen, what's going on here? He's saying the same name on the video as he is now in the backyard. Mom goes, yeah, we didn't have the heart to tell him. That's like the third one. His dog died. This is why leadership is taking people to new directions. This is what makes it so hard. You're having to say to them, your dog is dead. Like, this is reality. And so you want to look for the places you can affirm perception. Change is hard for everyone. If I came to your life and made a lot of changes to your life right now, it would not be easy. Change isn't easy. So what we want to do is perceive. How do we develop the skill to train ourselves to be leaders that aren't dangerous and directionless? Number one, we release the insecure ego and we affirm their reality. Okay? So how do we get to their reality if we don't know it? Well, that's number two. Second point of application. This goes back to something that I've shared in some ways, but I'm going to share a lot deeper in a future episode. Use the three meta roles that I talk about in chapter 10 of the Figure That Shift Out book, the sage empath leader. The sage, the wise one, the empath, the feeling, the connection, heart-oriented, the leader sets the direction. Here's what happens. When you know who you are as a person and you're able to move in and out of those three roles as you need, which is what I talk about with these meta roles, you know, every insecure leader goes, well, that's just who I am. They're going to have to deal with it. And they will peg out in one of those at a high level. They're not willing to develop themselves, right? So at different levels, my kids have needed different roles from me. At some points, they need empath, comfort. Some points, they need lead, direction. Some points, they need sage, right, where I'm helping them come to grips with an issue without, like, being aggressive and just directly hitting that issue. Instead, I let them come to conclusions, okay? So, but the second point of application here is use the meta roles to get to their reality. So the sage is going to surface their perception, which is their reality. The empath can comfort it. The leader can address it. Here's what we're going to do about it. So use the meta roles as you get into their reality to validate. This is what's going to relax them. So number one, release the insecure ego, affirm their reality. Number two, use the meta roles to get to their reality. Number three, don't die on mole hills. When I was a younger leader and I had this boldness that I just was so proud of, and this courageousness, and it was foolish because, oh, that looks like a little hill over there. I'm going to go die on it. Insecure leaders think they need to die on every hill. I used to think that college-level players played with more passion until a friend of mine who works in professional athletics, who I'm excited to introduce to you in a deeper way with some news we have coming out soon for Sight Shift, but he taught me that no, it's not that the college players are more passionate. The professional players know how to make better movements, saving their energy. You know, if they see a ball going out of court, they've faced that. If they're basketball players, they've faced that issue so many times, they know that ball's worth diving for, or that one isn't. I'm going to get hurt and I can't deliver on the next play. It's not about, you know, wildly diving after every ball. And this is what insecure leaders do. I've done it. They die on molehills. Okay? You're not going to be able to perceive the room if you die on molehills. Now, if somebody is suffering, if it is a value issue, that a value is being compromised, if relationships are being severely hurt, if innovation is shutting down, those are molehills, or those aren't molehills. Those are real hills, and I'll die on them. If somebody's suffering, stand up, die, right? That's an issue to cash in on. If values are being corrupted, the values of the organization, if relationships are being severely hurt through extreme divisiveness, or if innovation isn't moving forward, we're stuck, and we're just going, that's the way it always has to be, then that's something that needs to change. But many, 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 many times, energetic leaders run out and die over things that don't matter. So number three, don't die on molehills. You won't perceive the room. You won't feel the room. You'll be too blinded with your hot cheeks and hot ears directing you to action. Number four, be cunningly strategic. Be cunningly strategic. I broke this down in an earlier episode, what it means to be cunning as a serpent and harmless as a dove, that your motives are solid, and so you're not afraid to be the most cunning person in the room. But if you're going to perceive the room, you want to be strategic to find out where people are and what's happening. And part of being cunningly strategic is learning that you don't need to fill the space with your power and presence. If you don't create vacuums by flipping questions back, by asking questions, by letting people fill space with their reactions, because you don't insecurely need to see a reaction from them. If you don't do those things, you're not going to know where they are. And it's like playing cards. Let people show the cards in their hands so that you can be a leader who leads towards the vision and loves people. You're not just trying to find out so you can take advantage. Definitely there are manipulative people that do that and do take advantage. That's not the kind of leaders we want to be, but we're going to learn that skill because it's going to help us. Number five, use the knowledge of Myers-Briggs to speak to everyone's need. Here's what I mean by that. I've shared this with you before, but it applies so much with perceiving the room. Myers-Briggs, the most tested, researched, personality test that's available. And I like it for reasons. It's not the deepest. That's why I go more with stuff we do with identity fears. But it's still helpful. And when I'm working with somebody and they're sharing change in their organization, they need to perceive the room. Well, even as you're perceiving the room, make sure that you address the logic of the change, the motives of the change. This is why we're doing this, how it's been tested in other organizations, even if they're very different from yours, or industries, or families, if you're doing a family change, but how it's worked before somewhere, somehow, and the action that you're asking them to take. What you do when you share logic, motives, tested action, you capture everybody. What most people do when they're walking through a vision and sharing a vision, and that keeps them from perceiving the room, they'll just share one of those, and it's whichever one is their favorite, right? And so we want to capture hearts. That's what has to happen first, because people aren't necessarily logical. Their perception is a reality. But as we get into this, we do want to share the logic. We want to share why we want to do this, that it's been tested, and the action. Most leaders speak with a tinge of false words. There's just a little bit of sprinkling of false words in there, and it blocks their effectiveness. These four will help you not do that. Share logic, motives, tested action. It'll drive out the false words. I mean, it's crazy to me how when I call somebody on their voicemail and, sorry, I can't come to the phone. Well, that's false. They're not sorry. They're excited they didn't come to the phone. If I'm calling them, they're glad. No, none of us, we don't answer the phone for a reason. So people have a tinge of inauthenticity in a lot of things that they say. They don't realize it. It bleeds through their words. Sorry, I can't answer your call right now. And that's just a small picture of what I'm talking about, but it gives you a way that leaders do this. And so oftentimes leaders don't know they have this tinge of inauthenticity in what they're saying. And it doesn't mean you have to share everything, when you're sharing change. Just share logic, motives, tested action. But there's a tinge of inauthenticity there. And so what happens is people pick up on that. And they may not can even articulate it. They just don't trust you. So watch out for that. So one, two, three, four, five, six. We want to beware of partnerships. Beware of partnerships. Now, why does that fit with the skill of perceiving and feeling the room? Here's what happens. When you put yourself out there with vision, right? When you set yourself out there and you're willing to be misunderstood, you are dying to be affirmed. And this is where you can get deceived and tricked. Partnerships can be great. In fact, I have partners in my life, okay, partners with SiteShift. I'm a fan of it. I can tell you, though, that, when businesses come and I do work with their founders, if there's if there's issues at the main table, so to speak, with the founders, it's usually because they went 50-50 or third. That just never works. Somebody has to be the decision maker, and hopefully they're secure in who they are and they learn from others. What I mean by beware of partnerships, I mean beware of the insecure places that you can go to in your mind or heart, and then somebody is validating what you're seeing, and you're like, oh my gosh, they see like me. Awesome. Hey, that could be a great, amazing, life-changing partnership. But here's what I want you to do. I just want you to hit the pause button for a second and understand you've put yourself out there with this vision, right? You're willing to be misunderstood. Now you got to perceive what's really happening. Do not be swept away when people validate, because when people are validating your dream or the change, enjoy it, appreciate it, but just beware of partnering up with it, because nothing is as solid as it seems. So sometimes, like, somebody could swoop in and want to be a partner in your business, or could swoop in and want to really increase their role in the organization, but they're just being savvy in the moment in a way that isn't actually for your best interest. So just be aware of that. Number seven, watch for overspeaking and confusing. See, what happens when you overspeak, you're going to give a lot of context that can be confusing and read into. If you're asked a simple question and you give a long answer, people tend to be suspicious of that. Even if you're just trying to share a ton of information to be helpful, there's a time to give short answers and there's a time to give long answers. But when you're being misunderstood, just know that there's a time for both and watch for it, okay? What most people do is tend to fall into a pattern of only giving super long answers when they feel insecure. You know, so for some of you that are in the leadership coaching program that we've developed, your speaking or your email persona, you know, we're really shrinking down how to amplify the best parts of who you are in the smallest amount of exchanges possible. So you can give people a strong call to action, and not have to fill it with too much confusing fluff. So for some of you in the coaching, you know, we're working on your email responses where we get it down to like 2 to 3 sentences, and they have a template so you can really be effective, or if it's your speaking persona. So if we're working on that with you in the coaching, this is a time to note that. Now, for everybody else listening in, you know, it's a skill that you can learn, okay? You can train yourself to perceive the room. And if red cheeks and red ears are blocking your ability to perceive the room, it's because there's something insecure in you as you're launching out with this vision. And I want you to start to notice that. Go back and, you know, go to your identity space and build the trigger from the 7th podcast from week 7, where we talk about the identity activity, and learn to, you know, rebuild that physiological response so that in an insecure state, you're not blind to the reaction of others, but you're relaxed, so you're noticing them, body posture, breathing, you know, what their eyes are doing, everything. You're taking it in so that you can do the next skill. This is where we're going to be for skill 8. You can actually move the room. But for now, we want to feel the room. We perceive. We affirm reality. I'm thinking about this a lot, and we'll close down with this as I enter into a stage of raising teenagers. And, you know, there are times of being at this place where I'm like, oh my gosh, how can they not see this reality? I'm trying to cast for them. Last night it was time to come in, and I was ready to go to sleep, and they wanted to hang outside longer with their friends, but these friends can stay out longer. And here's the thing. My kids are going to drift towards whoever will encourage their dreams and affirm their perceptions. And it doesn't mean that I can't set direction and still be helpful to them, but if I'm not willing to validate them, validate their perception, they can't hear what comes after that. The same is true for the people you lead. So be on the lookout for that as you develop this skill of perception. Thanks for being here. Have an awesome one. Peace.